Today, more migration madness. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis. It's worth noting post covering finance and property news. High migration is putting pressure on home prices and rents and lifting the demand for more infrastructure and diluting the GDP per capita. That's the share of wealth generated in the country across an ever-increasing population, 84% of which growth came from migration. So this is now a big political hot potato. Many are calling for a cut in migration to fall to a level consistent with the current capacity to build new homes, though of course the corporate and university sectors want ever more people in the country to keep wages low and to boost the number of households to sell things to while the tax take rises, which is why the Federal Treasury also wants more people. Now there's been lip service to attempting to streamline and better target Australia's immigration system, though mainly it's been focused on a reduction in student numbers. But now, Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill says that regional communities should benefit more from overseas arrivals, including through changes to cumbersome occupation lists and settlement rules. Now, it's worth recalling that Treasury figures back in December's mid-year budget update showed net overseas migration was due to peak in 2022-23 before declining over the course of 23-24 and 24-25 financial years. Sensitive to community concerns about the pace of new arrivals, Labor then scrambled to announce tough new English language requirements for students and graduate visas, with a new genuine student test also set to come in force for the first time. To avoid visitor visas being used to get around integrity checks by the Department of Home Affairs, Labor increased the use of no further stay conditions on visitor visas, blocking individuals from transferring to other visa categories in order to stay in the country longer. This will affect thousands of students, most of whom come from India, who arrive on a tourist or other visa and then shift to a student visa once in Australia. And the government also put dodgy colleges on notice. The worst offenders who use their shop fronts by way of channeling so-called students into the workforce have been threatened with being shut down if they've not fixed their ways within 6 months. Now, it's worth remembering, though, that the government has had such powers since 2001 and has never used them. The regulator, the Australian Skills Quality Authority, also has had powers to shut down dodgy colleges. However, most end up in the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. Labor has also brought forward ramped up integrity checks and tougher visa conditions for foreign students in an attempt to better control the pace of arrivals in Australia ahead of record overseas migration numbers. Yet the latest suggests a peak of over 600,000. The new numbers are likely to further fuel anxiety about increasing immigration. And the argument, by the way, that this is just a catch-up following COVID restrictions is plain laughable. Yet now, Labor has flagged abolishing occupation lists for immigrants looking to settle in regional areas and could use major reforms to extend fast-track routes for high-income earners to come without a job offer. Ms. O'Neill released a discussion paper, Supporting Strong and Sustainable Regions, about policy settings for public consultation. Last Friday, she acknowledged the findings of a review by the former public service chief Martin Parkinson that regional migration settings have had little success to date. Ms. O'Neill wants to stop exploitation of workers, including working holiday makers and seasonal workers, and to better manage state migration planning, making towns and cities in the country and the bush more appealing to permanent moves is part of the plan. The government is already moving to a multi-year model for permanent migration, with the size and composition of the incoming cohort set every 4 years in consultation with state governments. The number will be determined after consideration of infrastructure and housing pressure, as well as skills shortages. Regional employer-sponsored visa rules could be changed, along with so-called designated area migration agreements. The details are negotiated between the federal government and states to speed up access to a broader range of overseas skilled workers, with possible concessions to visa requirements. between 2018 and 23, population growth in regional cities was at 7.24%, marginally outstripping growth in the capital cities at 7.09%. And growth in remote and very remote regions was minimal, though, leaving many struggling to maintain a population. In short, small communities around the country badly need skilled workers. The discussion paper suggests possible changes to which areas are included in the regional rules. Currently, two tiers are in place for areas outside the major capitals of Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. Rules for specific island workers and working holidaymakers use different definitions, making the system inconsistent and harder to administer. Ms. O'Neill said the Migration Review has shown the system is not working effectively for regional communities, including employers, workers, and country economics. The regions are a critical part of our economy and migration system. We are committed to building a system which delivers for regional Australia, she said. Under the former Liberal government, our visa system treated the regions as an afterthought. Our approach couldn't be more different. In 2024 to 25, about 44,000 employer-sponsored skilled work visas will be awarded, along with about 17,000 skilled independent visas used to plug gaps in the workforce. States and territories will nominate another 33,000 places to meet their local needs, with the same number coming through regional nominations and local employer-sponsored places. This discussion paper seeks views from regional communities on how we can get the migration system working for regional Australia, building on the strong set of actions we've taken since coming into government, Ms. O'Neill said. Opposition leader Peter Dutton has promised to cut Australia's permanent migration program from 185,000 to 240,000 for 2 years, or by 25%. Under the coalition plan, the permanent intake will then increase to 150,000 in year three and 160,000 in year four. But immigration commentator Abdul Rizvi used a speech to the National Press Club last week to call for 30 years of bipartisan support for immigration to continue. He invoked former US President Donald Trump's rhetoric as a warning for politicians in Australia. The danger with an election fought on immigration levels, as many Australian politicians on both sides have recognised, is that it could degenerate into a Trump-style name-calling and civil unrest, including at polling centres, Dr. Rizvi said. Yet moves by Labor and the coalition to cut Australia's permanent skilled migration intake might only be cosmetic, as employee-staffed businesses go around caps to recruit workers from New Zealand and working holidaymakers, a major report has said. Research from the Australian National University's Migration Hub also says any move to cap the number of international students at Australia's universities is unnecessary, with the number of incoming students set to fall as part of a post-pandemic return to normal trends. The report by demographer Peter McDonald says visa hopping needs to be stopped in its tracks, noting efforts by Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill to end the practice. It suggests foreign students seeking to extend their stay in Australia to be eligible only for a graduate visa or another student visa enabling postgraduate study. Those on a graduate visa could be assisted through government processes to find employment commensurate with their skill level, with the involvement of all levels of government, including local. The graduate visa could then be extended for up to a further 2 years if the student was employed in a position commensurate with their skill and if they were nominated by their employer. The student completing this path would then be eligible for permanent residence. But the report says that the race by the major parties to cut permanent and net overseas migration amid heated politics before the next election could fail, as employers will be able to recruit skilled workers from New Zealand and from temporary visa streams. Kiwis have an automatic right of residence in Australia, and at least 40,000 New Zealand citizens currently are living in Australia. In-demand occupations, including nurses and teachers, can be recruited to work in Australia by state and territory governments. And the report says cutting top-line overseas migration should spark a bidding war between states for talent, likely disadvantaging health and education systems already struggling in losing jurisdictions. Despite a heated political fight, the effect on overall numbers might only be, quote, cosmetic. The Albanese government wants net migration to fall to 250,000 next financial year, halving a record post-pandemic set of arrivals. Professor McDonald says that this is the first time in 80 years there has not been bipartisan support for migration and that it has become an election issue. Net overseas migration, which measures flows in and out of Australia by people intending to stay for 12 months or more, would fall to 160,000 under Mr Dutton's plan. But warning that common sense and careful analysis of immigration statistics will go out of the door ahead of the election, due around May next year at the latest, the report calls for permanent migration programs to stay at the current average levels and for the Australian Bureau of Statistics to divide estimated resident population numbers between temporary and permanent residents. And ratings agency S&P last week warned that capping international student numbers could threaten the viability of a major export and put the credit ratings of universities at risk. It said Labor's plan would crimp universities' financial performance and autonomy. Lower fee revenue could mean less internal funding for research, halting Australian universities' reason to set up the global rankings. This is the exact message that we've been sending to both the government and opposition. The consequence of policy to cap international students will be dire for both universities and the broader Australian economy. This has now been confirmed by an objective analysis by one of the world's top rating agencies. So here we have, in sharp contrast, all of the various parties playing the migration card. But the bottom line for me is this: unless we dial back migration properly and get it under control, in line with the ability to build new homes, then things are going to continue to deteriorate. And I have rather significant doubts about whether, in fact, universities would be so negatively impacted by lower student numbers. Maybe they could increase the quality of their education for a change. About time, too. More broadly, I do think there is a place for migration to the regions. But the problem, of course, is that we're not building homes in the regions either. So it doesn't necessarily solve that problem. In other words, this is the tip of the migration mess iceberg. And so far, little clear thinking is shown anywhere. The trouble is, what we're doing is treating little symptoms around the edge rather than the root cause issue. We should be cutting migration back to more normal levels straight away. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.